Oh, don't see a problem where there's not one, where there's not one, where there's not one. Oh, don't see a problem where there's not one. A simple, noble truth. There is a feeling across the land, across the land, across the land. Oh, there is a feeling all across the land that we can change.
Greetings from Earth, and welcome to the Creative Cosmos. This is Christopher Morris coming to you from Urbana, Illinois, in the heart of the Midwest. And it is splendid to be here once again, sharing my time, thoughts, and energy with you, my loyal listening audience. I have been inspired lately by some of the emails I've received in the good comments on some of the shows I've done in the past, and some of the articles, and some of the images, and I really appreciate all the support out there, and those of you who tune in regularly and follow along with what we're doing here, and I intend to keep it rolling no matter what. You know, this is what I'm going to keep going for my whole life, no matter what else is going on in the outside world. Creative Cosmos will be going on too, and I will continue to shape this world with my spirit, my heart, my creativity, and open the door for any who seek to join in, who get the idea and want to be a part of it. And it's great to hear back from people when they tell me that something I've written has touched them inside and changed how they look at things or helped them through a hard time. Man, you know, that means everything to me to hear that. It helps me keep going. It helps me keep producing. And, you know, when I am writing, when I'm sitting down to write or come up with one of these shows, I meditate on those who would listen and those whom I've heard from. And I send my heart out to each and every one of you when I do these shows, and to the new listeners, and to those of you to come. You know, maybe many months down the road, you'll find this show on archives. And, you know, what we do here transcends time and space. And I've heard from some people, you know, when I get into the flow and get things rolling, and they tell me that what I'm saying sounds like it's specifically meant for them. And I love to hear that, because then I know that the process is working exactly as it should, because I am trying to let the spirit flow through me and move as it will to resonate my nature, to be the hollow bamboo that sings the song of my own contribution to creation. And I try to throw that out there in the form of my articles and my songs and my images, so that somebody out there who's seeking to find something that will facilitate transformation in them, somebody who wants to discover some of the things that I've discovered for themselves and to open up into cosmic consciousness. So I throw all this stuff out there so that people can find it, and people are drawn to the right thing at the right moment. And I hope to just have what I've done become integrated with all the great material out there that helps people on the spiritual path. And that's what I try to do, is not reinvent the wheel, but take up the mantle of all those who've come before and are still continuing to this day to do the good work. The show today is called Free Mind Sunshine. And in just a few moments, I'm going to welcome Shab back to the co-host chair once again. It's going to be great to have him back. And I know many of you have written in saying, hey, where's Shab? When are we going to get to hear Shab again? And here we go. He's going to be on tonight, and many days in the future, giving you his unique perspective. And there's going to be a couple songs, including the song Free Mind Sunshine, which this show's concept is based off of, and some more surprises, and a visit from a guest who's going to be dropping by from time to time, maybe laying a little bit of down-home, earthy wisdom on us, Brooklyn Joe. So stay tuned to hear what he's got to say, because it's really quite fascinating. So thank you for joining us, and on we go.
So damn sorry.
No.
All right, now it's time to begin our journeys deep, deep into the process of deprogramming and releasing ourselves from the conditioning that binds us in many different ways. And to share that job of highlighting these things with me is good friend of the creative cosmos, someone who, without his help and assistance and support in the process of self-realization, this whole operation wouldn't be in existence. He's been a tremendous source of insight, wisdom, laughter, and love through the years, and it is truly a pleasure for me to share him with you. And as we get going here, I'm going to read a little bio I wrote up talking with him about some of his spiritual background, just so you can kind of get a feel on some of his influences. And you'll see he's got his own way, and but these some of these influences help shape his path as well. So here we go. Chab de Noir, who is our co-host and friend, has spent a lifetime synthesizing the wisdom traditions of the East and West. A musician and meditator, he has assimilated many sources into his own unique vision. His spiritual quest began with the Theosophists and then moved on to an extensive study of the Paul Foster Case Course. This provided him with a profound understanding of the Tarot, astrology, and Kabbalah. Then Chab was to go right for the heart, getting deeply involved with Yogananda's teachings, and finally making the leap to Osho. As a sannyasin, he lived in Osho's commune, first in India and later in Oregon, USA. Free of the mind, with an open heart, he embodies what it is to be on the path of enlightenment. Connected to the universe, he reveals cosmic truths we all seek to ascertain. So welcome to the show, Shabda.
Well, thank you, Chris. After hearing that, I think I better do a disclaimer.
Sure. A disclaimer.
Well, just to set the record straight right here from the beginning, I'm just an ordinary American who's read a lot of books and had a few experiences of my own and struggled to get past my past. Let's put it that way. So I want to stress that really everybody has spiritual and occult experiences, and it's available to all the time, provided we don't tune it out. There's the catch 22. Most of us tune it out most of the time, so we miss what's right in front of our noses.
Yeah, and that tuning out, it sometimes revolves around that conditioning, that input we've been immersed in since the beginning of our lives.
Right. The way I see it now, or let me just say the way I saw myself in the world then. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, actually a suburb called Kirkwood. And my parents were what I would call middle-class Christians. In other words, they weren't fanatics. They weren't fundamentalists, but they were very open-minded and very well-read in English literature. And I lived a normal life, believing that there was a God up there who created everything, and that I have to sort of spend my whole life making up for the fact that I was born. At least that was the message I got, is that there's somehow something wrong with everybody and that we have to atone, despite the fact that Jesus being crucified got us off the hook.
Right.
Still, that's not the subliminal message that I got from
Sunday
school.
Well, that's what they call original sin in Sunday school, like that mark. You're marked from the beginning. I mean, they'll come right out and say, you are a poor, miserable sinner.
Right.
And you're just a kid. Yeah. You got nothing to filter that through. And
that's right.
You trust the people around you and you love the people around you. And that's the first one of the first messages you get. It's about spirituality.
Well, see here, this is the strange thing is that in the church, I was conditioned by a Presbyterian church, Protestant church. My dad's family had been Roman Catholics, and they left the church to join Presbyterianism because it was something that was closer to what they could believe, what my dad's family could believe in. And he didn't really make a big deal about that. In fact, I think the only reason I know that he had been a Catholic or had been raised a Catholic was I asked him because my two aunts, his two sisters, remained Catholic. And so I just wondered one day, and he told me, and I asked him why, and he said, well, why did you change? And he said, well, I didn't like the idea of having to have an intermediary between me and God. And that pretty much settled it. I mean, I don't think we ever talked about it again, but I do remember that day, and because that really meant a lot to me, the fact that I could make contact with higher power all by myself. And of course, later I found out that I could only do it by myself. Only.
Yeah.
You can't get there through someone else. That's just, it just isn't, it's not in the cards.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because, you know, the common default religion that seems to be out there in society today is that, you know, when you bring like the priest or even a minister into it or something, it's like, so many people are dealing with intermediaries and they don't feel that power or that personal connection. You want to talk a little bit about some of those, you know, the specifics that cut people off from that individual or personal connection to the universe or the life force?
Well, yeah. The truth is we're all immortal beings. When we're born, we go into what has been called spiritual amnesia. We don't remember who we are. And that's the point of the incarnation. That's the very point, is to struggle through life on Earth, which compared to life beyond the physical body is extremely primitive. And there's a whole lot of wrong ideas going around. Well, you don't have to look very far to see that the world is a mess. It's more of a mess now than it has been probably for the last 200 years coming to a head, which is why these are very, very exciting times. But the idea is, let me put it this way. In fact, this is not my original phrase. I'm trying to think now. I've read so many books that my quotes in my head are all pretty much accurate because they hit me right between the eyes, but I can't remember exactly who said it. Mm-hmm. I believe this is a Tony Stubbs quote. It may even be a channeling from a being who calls himself Serapis, but he says, look at it this way. You are not a human being having a spirit, having a soul, experiencing a spirit. You are a spirit experiencing being human. Now, there's a very great difference in that distinction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that makes all the difference in the world.
You know? Yeah, so. I mean, that is inherent in that. If you really look at that change, that little slight change, it means, should I dare say it, you are God.
Well, you know,
or let's put it this way. You are gods. We are all gods in the making. There is no death. There's only just transformation. So a few things became clear over the years. First of all, I was alive before I was born. I have been other people. Some of whom I remember quite distinctly. I have been, according to what I've read, now this I don't remember, I have been other beings than human. Animals.
Yeah.
Possibly ETs. Uh-huh. And this is true of everybody. Right. Now, this is not what we get taught in Sunday school. We get taught that we better be good, or when we die, we're either going to be accepted into constant bliss for the rest of eternity, or constant terror.
Yeah, yeah.
So about midway through my life, I began to wonder, well, now how did this horrible story get started in the first place, and why did I believe it?
Yeah.
Only because it was reinforced by everyone that I was around. Teachers. Nobody ever said any of these things directly to me, but it was an assumed common belief that all of humanity, at least all of the humanity that I knew of growing up in the Midwest, the mass collective consciousness of selected beliefs that all of a whole group believes in. Uh-huh. And you get this pressure because we are very, very, very open as children. We get the subliminal message of the sum total of all of these beliefs. We get these because we're open. Not necessarily that somebody, you know, said it directly, although I have had some of those things said to me. And of course, when you're a child, you just shiver and shudder into your boots.
Well, you don't have the power yet to speak independently. You don't gain that kind of personal insight and ability to stand on your own. And to further elaborate on that process of what you're saying, you know, it's you know, there's the overt conditioning of where you might go somewhere to a church or to a school, you know, because as we were talking even before the show, schools are a prime source of indoctrination and shaping as well. You know, it's almost like you can't you can talk about just the religious aspect or just the education aspect or just this aspect, but in a sense, they all are kind of doing the same thing, putting like rigid thoughts in your head, ways to filter the world, to filter the natural experience, and to run it through some kind of a system of thought that is supposedly allowable or something, you know? And so there's the overt teaching where someone might be talking to a class or to a congregation saying it is this way and it is this way and it is this way. But then those people will go out and just like you said, you know, they'll be talking to each other, but they'll be talking to each other from within the context of those parameters. And so they're constantly reinforcing it in each other. And then anybody who comes near, then they try to wrap them up in those parameters too, but it's not immediately noticeable on the surface because they might just be having some kind of innocent conversation about this or that or this or that. But pretty soon you see that, you know, what seems to be acceptable, what seems to be allowable, what seems to be okay, not disturbing to other people.
Right. let me say that just so I don't come across as saying that my whole training was negative, it wasn't. It was done by very well-meaning people who most of the time had my best interest at heart. The only question that I have is, of all of these people, does your vision of what you think is in my best interest, is that vision really in my best interest? And I would have to say no.
Well, even it couldn't be, because if you talk about the fact that, well, you're unique, you're original, whatever you're going to bring to the earth is going to be new, therefore no one else can know it.
That's it. That's it. Yet, on the other hand, we have to be trained in some way in order to fit into society. Now, the training that we do get, well, for instance, in my mid-30s, I sort of halfway woke up and I thought, man, the American dream sucks. That's basically it, because I had followed all the rules, and I kept waking up in the morning and saying to myself, my God, is this all there is?
Well, there might be many people out there even listening to this show who are asking themselves that same question. That's an important kind of a milestone or a point in a spiritual awakening where you know, some part of yourself asks that question, or your inner world feels so called, but then you just look at the surface and you're like, man, you know, it's you're describing almost the soul call or you know, the potential seeking to be actualized.
I'm pretty certain that this is a natural process that, well, for instance, my life would be considered a fairly easy life, I think, for when I compare what has happened to some other people. You know, I was born into a reasonably affluent family, so I didn't lack much from physical plane things. I never felt like there wouldn't be food on the table or something like that, and many people have to deal with that. I got a good education. I was relatively successful as a composer and a trumpet player, and received a lot of recognition, and on and on and on. You know, I was able to pretty much do all of the things that I set out to do, and yet it still was not enough. Now, am I being greedy? I don't think so. I think this is something that every human being, if you're willing to listen to your inner self, what your inner self eventually says to you is that whatever you have done, no matter how successful you've been in the outer world, it ain't enough. It's not enough. That's what everybody kind of realizes. Now, there are only two things you can do. You can either go into a dark funk and spend the rest of your life being angry and miserable, or you can get on the path. That's the urge to be on the path. And I think we're hardwired that you can only go so long focused on the outer world. Sooner or later, your inner peace becomes the center of attention.
Yeah.
And if you fight with it, you're going to lose.
Well, you know, the more you start to feel that inner call, when you're not in alignment with it, you suffer over it, because you feel that pain of being separate.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of reminds me of Osho and the mustard seed when he talks about the point of repentance. when you go all the way to your limit, as far as you can go into the world. And he described how that's what the real meaning of repentance is turning around.
Yes.
When you start coming back from the edge. You know, so we accumulate all this stuff, all this information, all these facts, all these ways of looking at things. And then when we get to that point, well, now we have to go back the road that brought us to that point. We have to trace it back and unravel it all. And it's almost like a decoding game. Or, you know, that's maybe partly why we enjoy things like the Da Vinci Code. Or, you know, we have our own code that we have to decode to get back to the source.
Yes.
And so when we talk about the education or the religious aspects or this aspect or this of that which was put into us, well, then that's so that we can highlight these things so that you could see for yourself many of these same inclinations or many of these same processes that are at work at all of us and start to release them. And then when you release them, you kind of recover the energy that was bound up in holding that fixed idea.
Yeah. The payoff is that once you become involved in this process, you begin to feel moments of childhood again. Now, I'm not talking about memories. I'm talking about the fact that every child feels that life is absolutely wonderful and thrilling. And this is something that adults, we begin to lose little by little by little. Unless you go through this process of contacting your inner self. That's where all that innocent joy is stored. And you can contact it. You have it with, everybody has it with them. All the time. It's just a matter of you can either tap into it or ignore it. I suppose that's what the supreme ignorance is.
Well, I mean, that's an important point because I think some people think, you know, when they identify with the world and think that the physical world is all that there is, they think that the process of becoming older just shuts you down, and that's what it is. They don't know necessarily that there is a way back or that there is something else because they become so deadened down and so focused on the external world that maybe the thought doesn't even, you know, they lose track of it completely, never to find it again.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I just saw yesterday, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. On Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, democracynow.org. She devoted an entire show to Studs Terkel, who was celebrating his 95th birthday. And I'll tell you, this guy radiated youthfulness in an old, decrepit body. You could see that he had arthritis in his hands. He said he couldn't type anymore. But my gosh, the look coming out of his eyes was like just a newborn child, and the enthusiasm and the wit, and like, you know, he was totally there. And I thought, man, now there's somebody who knows.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that, you know, that starts getting into like the pure zen of it, you know, the innocence, the being able to see life and just reflect it, not interpret it, not try to put it somewhere into specifics, but just because not only does this unraveling free us mentally, but it opens us to new realms, to whole new ways of perceiving existence, you know.
Absolutely.
To deepen our experience, to, you know, we start feeling the astral plane ourselves. We start living there and here. And and when we see things in the external world, no longer do we just see their surface, but we also can feel what's behind it or feel the flow that's invigorating the life all around us, because now we have our own connection to it.
Yeah. So the problem becomes, How do you get the connected? Now, for some people, I don't want to come across as saying, for instance, that the Christian religion is entirely wrong, because many people do make this very same connection that I'm talking about through the church and through the accepted ways. And I think it depends on your personality. For me, I had to study the East in order to get really excited about it, because the way Christianity was presented to me was really pretty much through guilt and fear. And that just did not, I never bought into it. Even as a child, I didn't. I thought, huh? No, I'm okay. Now, I didn't go to a hellfire and damnation religious service over and over again. You know, it was pretty reasonable, but still, there was something about it that just didn't sit right with me, and I think that was part of my life plan, was to study all the different approaches to see if I could find a common thread. And I pretty much have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's really the work that we're trying to do here. You know, you and I talking and having the Creative Cosmos, we cycle all these different things through from all the different, I mean, Creative Cosmos itself is kind of what I found to be the thread that ties it all together. You know, that the life force, the spirit, the energy that flows through you, you know, you can see in all these traditions that, you know, that the energy was around, you know, the initial master of these religions. You know, I like to go back, you know, as far as like considering religion, I always like to go back to the original teaching of the master or whatever, and strip away the burden of history, so to speak, and try to extract the essential truth. And often when we do that, we find it's nowhere near to what it has become in the world and the way it's practiced by the masses.
Right. It's, let's get to the crux. You're saying the history and the tradition around each master, this is like just the cover of a book. And most people pretty much live their lives worshiping the cover. Well, they get all caught up in the stories told about the different masters and never really go into the deep part of what they were really saying and what that means to me and you. For that, you really can't, I mean, you can read what they say, but you have to verify everything inside your own self. Otherwise, you're just gathering information. You're not really making any spiritual strides or any revelations on your own. You're just gathering information.
Complicated.
This is not it. This is not it. Now, the information might be really exciting. I mean, I've gathered information all my life. My gosh, I'm a Gemini. We're the readers of the zodiac, and I've read them just, you know, thousands of books, and it's very entertaining to me. But at some point, you have to go inside and test it inside yourself, and that's where the real process begins to happen. So could we talk just a little bit about the different methods?
Sure.
I can talk a little bit about the methods that I have experienced. And I'm sure there are many of them are the same that you have. Uh-huh. I remember the day that it finally dawned on me that my education had done a very good job of teaching me how to think. it had done an extremely poor job of teaching me how to disconnect from the mind. What happens with our education is it's left brain dominant.
Big time, yeah.
It's memorization, it's gathering facts, making conclusions through logic, through language. And had I not been a musician, it would have been entirely left brain dominant. Now, what happens to people is by the time you're 20 years old, you're addicted to thinking. You can't just sit quietly and not think. You try it. You can't do it for 30 seconds. Basically, what happens is people are afraid of the silence because it's so vast. Everyone's afraid of this because it's the unknown. But that's what we have to go into. That's where the path leads, into the unknown. Mm-hmm. And you can't copy Buddha. You can't copy Jesus. You can't copy whoever. You can't go where the others have gone, because that's not the real path. Your path is you only. And that's the rub.
Yeah.
Many people want to just follow and say, okay, I'm going to be okay if I do this and this and this and this, and I try real hard, I'm going to be okay. Well, here's the truth. You're going to be okay even if you don't follow all that stuff. What's there to not be okay? I mean, the universe is completely amoral. Let's put it that way. Not good, not bad. It's completely indifferent. We all have the choice to go in any direction that we want. That's the point.
Right. That's almost like the fundamental universal law, in a sense.
Absolutely. Everything. Otherwise, why would evil exist if the source didn't want to experience what that would be like? So what happens is you experience this and that, and you choose, well, what makes me feel good and what makes me feel horrible? And then you adjust.
Right. Well, a key point to what you're saying is you have to learn to trust yourself and your own feeling more so than what you're being told.
Right.
And to stand by that. And to
Now, we're not taught that. Not really.
Yeah.
I didn't get the... Well, let me correct myself here. I wasn't taught that in Sunday school. I wasn't taught that in school. I was taught that by my dad and my mom both. You know, they didn't put strictures on to me when I was wrestling with a problem. They'd say, you have to, you know, feel inside yourself what's right. And then once you do, you take the appropriate action.
Yeah, and that in itself kind of has a snowballing effect, because you trust yourself, you actualize something, and then you have a chance to reflect on that, then you trust yourself again, and you actualize something, and then pretty soon this becomes a little more of a flow, and you're starting to shine your own light.
Yeah.
You know, you start, that's how the source or the center comes through you and shines out to the world, as opposed to you just being blank and having the world imposing its criteria on you.
Right, right. Now, basically, just how to contact that part. My whole experiences as a church-going, sincere aspirant of Christian belief never got me to that point. I never touched center through any of the techniques that I was taught. It wasn't until I began to study Yogananda and began my first initial experiences in meditation, quieting down of the mind, that I began to experience peace. And it finally dawned on me that language, verbiage, thinking, these are the barrier to bliss. You can't feel bliss while you're thinking. When you're thinking, you're thinking.
Yeah.
You can't see the beauty of a rose while you're saying, oh, how beautiful.
Yeah, so... So in a sense, right, it isn't even the specific form that a dogma or a belief system takes. It's the very act of thinking about it that is the obstacle, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And all these things become a justification for the thought process to take hold, to take root, and to continue to grind.
Yeah. So now we're faced with a dilemma, if you're an avid reader the way I am, you have to weed out your books. There are really only two kinds of books. One are the thinkers, and the others are the knowers. And boy, there's a big difference. And the thing that's odd is sometimes the knowers can't express very well what they know. And sometimes the thinkers express extremely eloquently stuff that they really don't know.
Yeah.
Now, that's a strange phenomenon, because this is a very tricky thing when you are trying to read your way into spirituality, which, of course, everybody does. Everybody gets on the path, reads a lot of books, because you feel at first like, man, nobody else on my block is doing this. I must really be strange. None of my friends are doing this, and boy, I'm really need to find some company here so I don't feel totally alone.
Right, yeah.
And then the next stage is that you begin to really enjoy your aloneness. That comes through just sitting silently and doing nothing. It's the simplest thing. You unconnect from the world a certain part of your day, and things just miraculously work out without you knowing how.
Yeah.
Now, if that's not magical, I don't know what is.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So the things that I have done, you know, I mean, they're very simple. I never got much into mantra, mainly because Osho talked against mantra a lot. He said that was a form of self-hypnosis, and that essentially what you do is put your mind to sleep. He says you don't want to put your mind to sleep. You want to put your mind at rest, and there's a difference. When the mind is not moving, it's brilliantly turned on.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
When you're hypnotized, you've given your power over to another source. So that you have to be careful.
Yeah.
I mean, the spiritual path is not without its dangers.
Yeah.
Now, Osho had some really bizarre meditations. My favorite was mirror gazing.
Oh, yeah.
Which essentially what he described. And you might try this sometime, although I must say that you might have a friend close by, because it can be very, very unnerving. Essentially, what Osho described, or what he explained to us, was that most of the time when we blink our eyes, we are in the process of keeping our repressions below the threshold, and that most of our eye blinking has nothing to do with a biological need. So this meditation is simply what you do is you stare at yourself in a mirror, and you force yourself not to blink. And what happens is all your repressions come up, and you have to deal with it. So it's a real kind of a volatile meditation in the sense that you encounter all your psychological stress that's been underneath the surface and influencing you through the back door. Now, this is a very quick way to get cleansed, although I must say it's a very uncomfortable physically to force yourself to keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
And essentially what you see in the mirror eventually is all your past life looking back at you.
Well, it kind of kicks in your third eye too when you're staring like that, which is partly why you can see that stuff so well too.
Mm-hmm. What happens is if you stay with it long enough, the image, the mirror becomes blank. And that's when you know you're at center. It's extremely still. And I have not been able to hold it for very long, but I know that it's there.
You made it all the way to the blank mirror.
Yeah.
Which essentially is what we are.
Yeah.
Blank mirrors reflecting all the phenomenon that passes through.
Yeah.
Hey, Shahab, I was thinking, why don't we take a little break here? That's a good place to give a little rest.
And okay.
Well, I want to play one of your tunes, Loveland.
Oh,
you
okay.
You want to give a little intro to that?
Sure.
Right now?
Say it again.
We're going to play the tune Loveland. You want to give a little intro to it?
Oh, a little intro.
Yeah.
Sure. Loveland was written by two of my friends, Wayne Harrison, who was a wonderful trombone player and composer. He was my first master's degree student that studied under me when I taught at, I was a composition teacher at East Texas State University. And Wayne and I both kind of dropped out of the academia, and we were just working musicians, and we had done a lot of projects together. So Wayne was one of the composers, and the other composer was Gloria Morgan, who was a wonderful jazz singer and pianist that I was working with and also living with at the time. Mm-hmm. And Gloria had written these words, and she got together with Wayne. And I remember I was in the room when they wrote this tune.
Wow. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, man, what a great tune. I got to write a chart on this.
Sweet. Yeah.
The next day, I took their sketches, and I wrote a sort of small size big band. I think it was three trumpet parts, three trombones, or two trombones, I think, and four saxophones, Yeah, I believe that's it. There weren't any saxophones. I'm thinking of something else. No, there were three alto flutes.
Oh. Wow.
Now, the way we put this together, it sounds as if we just got all the musicians together and we just, you know, played it. But that's not how we did it. Wayne and I had combined equipment, and he had turned his two-car garage into a recording studio.
Yeah.
And so I played all the flugelhorn parts, and just overdubbed one at a time. There was a friend of ours who had an alto flute, so he played all the flute parts on alto flute, so it has a very mellow sound. And Wayne did the trombone parts, and I'm trying to think what else is on there. It's been a while since I've heard this. There's one point where Wayne, I think, toward the end, put a synthesizer part over the top, and he had an old ARP synthesizer.
Oh yeah,
an analog synth, and so it was just a project of love. Took us about a week to do from beginning to end, from the conception to the end of it, and It's like many of Gloria's tunes, it's autobiographical in nature. She's talking about stuff that had recently happened to her. So if you listen to the words, you can get a little bit of an idea of what this person was going through.
Cool. All right, here we go. Loveland.
There is a place, I'm already headed there, it's Loveland. I've got my ticket, love was the only fare in Loveland. I looked into your eyes and something I felt inside took a hold of me, set my spirit free, we can fly. Let me take you by the hand. Close your eyes and touch the sky. We don't need a magic carpet. All you do is take my hand. We'll fly. Turn my head around, we can fly. Welcome to Loveland, let me take you by the hand. Close your eyes and touch the sky. We don't need a magic carpet, all you do is take my hand. We'll fly in Loveland, we'll fly in.
I'd like to welcome to the show a man who's a writer, thinker. He likes to work on the computer. He likes to be concerned with the matters of utmost importance in life. And one of my goals on the Creative Cosmos is to bring anybody who's got something to say and give them an opportunity to express themselves. And I know this man feels passionately about many things, and he's got a little different flair to him. He's a real character, and I wanted to give you all a chance to get to know him and hear what some of the things he has to say, because I think it's important stuff, or else he wouldn't care about it so much. So I'd like to welcome to the Creative Cosmos, Brooklyn Joe.
Thank you for having me, Christopher. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, we have nice and growing audience tuning in, and yeah, I know you you write a lot, and you've written some political articles, and mm-hmm. You know, this show we're doing today is about conditioning and how to free yourself of the things that get stuck in the mind, you know, brainwashing mm-hmm. kind of things sure. That might come out of TV, out of billboards, anything that tries to shape people's mind. What do you think about the whole thing going on out there of where there are forces trying to shape people's thoughts and the general climate out there of how people are dealing with that?
I believe it's complete tyranny at its most basis root. I've dealt with many years. I can't believe, to me, I'm a free thinker. You know, I question the government. I question authority. You know, I don't just accept what the newscaster tells me or what the president tells me or anybody else. You know, I think for myself. I figure things out. You know, this is the sad truth. Okay, in this day and age, we have access to the internet. You know what that means? That means that the average citizen today has access to better and more informed information than a king did 100 years ago. Can you believe that? An average peasant, you know, in today's terms, has better information than a king did 100 years ago. But yet, we have a really high illiteracy rate. You know, I talk to people all the time, and it's just ridiculous because people do not think. All they do, what they work, they do their job by rote because they've been doing it for so long, right? Then they go home, watch some dumbass reality show or some nonsense game show, whatever, you know, soap operas and whatnot. But meanwhile, they don't think. They don't do anything active. How many people do you read other than maybe a little bit of the paper or a magazine or whatever? How many people actually read a book anymore? Come on. You know, we got to stay informed. I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah, you know, how do you, how would you motivate the people or try to convince the people of the importance of doing that? I mean, Why do you think it is that some people just never feel like doing that? That they're fine to just kind of look the other way and let life roll on without them?
People are it's my feeling that people are content to be apathetic, okay? I'll give you a prime example. Years ago, I read a science fiction book where it was almost like The Matrix, you know, where the world was really terrible, but on the outside it looked all good. It was all a facade, right? But in this version, what happened was the world was really terrible, and so people didn't want to deal with life anymore, so they were hardwired to a computer that the computer was hardwired tailored to each person's, you know, idea of nirvana. So these people were thinking in their minds that everything's great in their life, they're wonderful, they're on a sunny beach in Hawaii or whatever, you know, but meanwhile the fucking world is crumbling on around them. And that's a real good parallel for what's going on today. Basically, how I decided to fight this and to make people aware is becoming a writer and a reporter. I worked for the Parkland College newspaper, The Prospectus. I've also have a blog on MySpace, and I'm writing.
Okay, Parkland College, and that's in Champaign, Illinois. And let's go ahead. You mentioned your blog. Let's go ahead and give it out there a chance for people to come check out some of your writing. It's blog.myspace.com/. Stop, think, and evolve.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Basically, I also write for the Paxton, Illinois Record and the Loader Times in Illinois as a reporter correspondent. And basically, what I try to do is when I write my opinions, when I write my editorials, my main thing is I want you to think about what I'm saying. I want you to actively listen, even if you don't disagree with me, even if you vehemently disagree with me or you agree with me, it doesn't matter. I want you to think about what I said and make a decision for your own. Take time to really realize what this world is about. People basically live in an illusion. You know, they walk around and they have no idea what's really going on in life. And it's just amazing to me. I could see it clear as a bell, and people walk around like they're blind. I don't get it, you know. I don't get it. But I'm trying to do my best to help and to not be criticizing and condemning, and that's why I've learned to... I'm just beginning to learn a little bit about Buddhism, a little bit about Zen, about the chakras, and I'm trying to make it a whole, take my writing to a whole new level and do something good for humanity. That's what I like to do.
Sweet, man. That sounds great. It's great to here that, you know, just more people just in the American culture and the society are coming across some of these things. You know, like you say, you're getting into a little bit of Zen, a little bit of studying on chakras or energy centers or, you know, just all these this information that's been out there in the East, in the Eastern wisdom traditions. It's been part of that for thousands of years, and you know, there's it's just been kind of closed out of the West because some of the prejudices or specific things, you know, like Christianity's been so prevalent in a lot of ways that they don't even leave room for other philosophies. But that tide is turning now, and more things are becoming available, and now we can see from a broad and universal perspective, and it's a great thing to hear.
That is, it really, really is great to hear. You know, I was talking to a friend this morning, and I was telling him what I was, you know, reading about and getting into and stuff. And I said, you know, it doesn't matter, because basically everything is universal aspects of changing myself, of growing, of evolving, and basically a lot of the steps that the process is involved, you know, it involves tearing down old belief systems and replenishing it and really thinking about what's going on. And so it doesn't matter if I go through NA, if I go through Christianity, if I go through Muslim, Judaism, you know, or some other form of psychology or whatever, what have you. The fact of the matter is, if I change myself and I think and I become informed and I take action to make this a better world and not worry about, you know, greed and what do I own and this and that, you know, if I worry about helping people and also helping humanity as a whole, my job is that's what's important.
Yeah, great stuff, man, and it's great having you stop by. We'll have you stop by again, the Creative Cosmos Radio Show, and give us an update on some of your thoughts. Let me give out your blog address one more time, blog.myspace.com/stopthinkandevolve. So, yeah, thanks for coming by the Creative Cosmos, Joe, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, Shabda, it's been a great show so far. We had a nice, long, healthy opening segment, and we've heard some tunes, and we've just been playing around in the cosmos today.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we talked about so many things. I think maybe what we ought to do now is try to wrap up a central idea.
Yeah.
And the one quote that I recalled sometime earlier is the distinction, making the distinction between what the ordinary mind sees is that we are all human beings having a spiritual experience.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of like saying that the sun goes around the earth.
Right. Yeah, I guess it is.
It's the other way around. You're really a spirit having a human experience. And for that, you have to become aware of your greater self. Now, I understand that you've devised your own meditation to that effect in accumulating an awareness of your greater self. So I'm going to turn this over to you, and let's see what kind of meditation you came up with.
All right. Yeah, I'll give a little intro to it. At the end of every Creative Cosmos show from now on, I want to have a meditation, and we can gather these meditations and collect them and try them out. And I'd love to hear your feedback. Any of you out there listening, you could email me at cmoors@creativecosmos.org. And I'd love to hear if any of these work out for you. You know, some of what we talked about today, a lot of what we talked about today was how our mind gets shaped and how we have to transcend that mind and connect to our higher energies. And another thing that I've found in my own explorations on the path is somewhat the emotional imprint that some of these things leave on us. Like if we live under the influence of these mind-shaping events, then we are excluding a part of our whole self, because we're filtering the higher self through those limiting parameters. And so somehow we have to restore that full self to capability. We have to come bring all that back into the picture, into the moment, so that we have our full vibrancy, our total resonance. And then the source energy or the spirit energy or the life energy will have a open channel with which to flow through us. And so this meditation that I've devised over, just talking with people and describing things to them and seeing how it worked for me, I realized, well, you have to recover parts of yourself. You have to bring yourself back. You have to heal all those parts of yourself lost in space. And all you have to kind of go over your whole entire life, and your whole soul. Your soul remembers everything that's ever happened. We don't have to hold it in the mind, because soul remembers everything. And when we reconnect to soul, we get kind of an overview of everything that happened, and we go through all the circumstances and release everything that's bound and recover everything that's rightfully ours. And this little meditation here that we're going to close the show with is one useful tool to do that. And so just before we do that, I'd just like to say thanks, Chob, once more. And Creative Cosmos wouldn't be the same without you. It's great to have you on the show.
It's entirely my pleasure.
And we'll do many more.
Yes.
We got many things in store for you, everybody. So thanks for tuning in. And again, this is Creative Cosmos Radio. And our website is creativecosmos.org. And make sure you check out Shab's Corner, where we collect some of the links and writing, links of interest to Shab and some of his writings, too. So here we go. We're going to close the show with the Call It All Back meditation. And little bit of music to wrap things out. So thank you for joining us, and more will be on the way soon. This is a meditation that is quite simple and very helpful to those of you that are on the path of self-realization. One thing we have to do in order to recover our power and make open the pathways so that the soul can enter the body is that we have to restore or recover those lost parts of ourselves. Parts of ourselves that weren't able to express in the past. Maybe some traumas occurred, you know, and it goes even beyond this life to all lifetimes. Any part of ourself that was ever left behind in any situation. We get beyond time when we are dealing with the soul. To be one with your higher self, you recover all parts of yourself in all times, in all incarnations, in all circumstances. Heal and make yourself whole. And this is one way to facilitate that process. It's the Call It All Back meditation. And it goes like this. When you inhale deeply and imagine all the parts of yourself all throughout the cosmos coming back into your center. You call it all back when you inhale. And when you exhale, you relax. You inhale, you call it all back. Exhale, relax. And then again, on every inhale, imagine like you're creating a vacuum and you're pulling all the parts of yourself in, calling it all back. Exhale, relax. And you need to do this for about only 5 or 10 minutes, and you will feel when you're done that your whole energy system is invigorated, that you have more presence in the moment. And if you do this over even a couple of weeks, you'll begin to gain psychic abilities, because some of this which you're recovering will be released into higher vibrations. As you pool your energy, you're able to tune into higher and higher frequencies. And so your psychic perceptions will increase when you call it all back. Exhale, relax. Inhale. Exhale. Call it all back. Exhale. Relax. Mm-hmm.